Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 4 of Start With Questions, a transformational leadership podcast hosted by Mount Vernon Ventures, an R&D company at the Mount Vernon School in Atlanta, Georgia. I am your host, Kaylin Curtis, Executive Director of Mount Vernon Ventures. Joining me today are Ann Marsh Rutledge, Head of Learning and Innovation for Ventures, and Jared Colley, Upper School Head of Learning and Innovation and Competency-Based Education Expert at Mount Vernon School. Today's question we are going to attempt to tackle in a timely manner is, how can I really measure learning growth? That's a big one. Jared, do you want to start? How do we really measure learning and what tools can we use? But first, would love for you to introduce yourself as a first timer on the Start With Questions podcast.
Well, thank you, Kaylin. And thank you, Ann Marsh, for having me as a guest for this episode. This is a topic that is very dear to me because I think it's one way I would tell my own story of how I moved from just being an English teacher to someone who is really having conversations about education at a much broader level, and it has opened me up to opportunities for leadership in the role I play now at Mount Vernon. And really the first thing that got me on that journey was transforming how I assess and transforming how I grade student work, which led me on a path to transforming how I teach in general and how I approach the idea of what are best practices for cultivating positive learning environments for students that are about growth. So as I think about how we measure learning, one thing that comes to mind is, you know, and I have to credit a thinker who's thought a lot more about this than me, which is Thomas Gusky, one of the foremost experts on grading and assessment. One of the things that he tells us is that we first of all have to make a distinction between historically how we used to grade, which was on a normative spectrum, and distinguish that from what we might call criteria-based grading, right? So a normative approach to grading might be one with a bell curve where a certain amount of kids are going to get an A, a certain amount of kids are going to fail, and a certain amount of kids are going to fall in the middle. It's an idea that we are sorting students based on ability and putting them into different tracks. And this has its historical context in the 20th century when we moved towards obligatory schooling. And we had a huge influx of unskilled learners enter our public institutions. And we needed to figure out how do we track these people properly. And of course, they established an A to F grading system that was normative. And there were certain amount of kids that were going to be A students. And there were certain amount of kids who perhaps, you know, advancing in school was not for them. And so right there, there was a philosophical assumption that some kids can learn really well and other kids not so much. What we're moving more towards in a competency-based education environment is a belief that all kids can learn and all kids can learn anything. And there is no need to sort and track in that regard. And instead, we need to meet every learner where they're at. And we need to measure them not based on a normative curve, but measure them based on clear and explicit criteria. So when I am asked, how do you measure learning? I first of all want to make explicit, what is your criteria? And I would say, just like Thomas Gusky, that there's probably three distinct categories that we could name. Your criteria could be product-based criteria. Your criteria could be process-based criteria, looking at the process of how they learn, the process of how they complete a project. Or it could be progress-based criteria. And in the real world, things are a lot messier than three clean buckets. And so obviously, any criteria is probably going to, in some way, have a mixture of some product-based criteria, some process-based criteria, and perhaps some progress-based criteria. The important thing is that we commonly define it and we make that explicitly clear to students. And now we have a common idea of what we're measuring. So that's one way I would start to answer that question. And I'm sure Ann Marsh probably has something she would add as well.
Sure. I guess I would just add in a little more detail about how we would actually deploy that practically here at the Mount Vernon School. So we use a scale of novice, emerging, proficient, and advanced for all of our grading. And we make sure that every student, whether they're our preschool learners or our seniors in the upper school, understand what those common expectations are for all of the kids before they go into any assessment situation. And then we give lots of opportunities for self-assessment, for feedback, for practice along the way. So lots and lots of formative opportunities and choices about how a student would like to be assessed, whether they're one of our littles or one of our bigger students. They're still important to have choice and voice about their assessment, whether they're ready for it, what they need to help them meet their goals. So just some practicality about what we do and how we do it. This is also a journey that we've been on here at Mount Vernon School for about 10 years now. So we started with a standards-based grading approach in the lower school in 2012, 2013, and then have scaled to a really true competency-based approach in all divisions within the past 5 years, really. So, and I'd say, and Jared, you and I get to work on this topic quite a bit, but I would say every day is a continual learning and growing, right? We're still adjusting the tools that we use. You're never just a one and done that you've made a proficiency scale and now it's done. It's a constant readjustment. Is it valid? Is it reliable? Is it working for our students? Is it equitable for all of our learners? And so constant reevaluation on the tools that we're using as well.
And just to add to Ann Marsh's details that she shared, we do not prioritize or focus on some sort of singular alphanumeric grade when measuring student learning and recording that data into some sort of transcript or some sort of record keeping. And as Ann Marsh shared, we assess students on a proficiency scale, a 4-point proficiency scale from novice to advanced. But I think it's important to say that we also do that in a standards-based grading environment, as opposed to what I would call an assignment-based grading environment. And I would like to share a little bit about what I mean by that. Instead of having an alphanumeric grade, students have proficiency scores in discrete granular standards, right? Such that you don't have a single gauge that says you're an 85% or a 75%, but like the dashboard of your car, you have multiple gauges, and each of those gauges are reporting on the progress or health in that given area. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we have such a clearer, but also a unique and personalized picture of every student's profile in terms of where they're progressing and where they might need intervention and where they're truly advanced. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to share that distinction of standards-based grading versus assignment-based grading, because that also impacts how we might reassess. When you're using a standards-based grading approach, a reassessment doesn't have to just be a retake. Let's do the same thing over again. Let's do the same thing over again. Perhaps that performance task had three standards tagged to it. Two of them you demonstrated proficiency, but one of them you're still novice. A reassessment might be a performance task that just targets that one skill that you're still novice in, so that you might have another opportunity to demonstrate growth, to demonstrate improvement, to demonstrate your learning, right? And so as a result of moving from an assignment-based approach to a standards-based approach, we can truly personalize each student's assessment journey, mm-hmm. right? And reassessment might look different for each unique profile, as it should. And that's another way that we're meeting them where they're at.
And that really kind of, those buzzwords, grading and assessment, kind of prompt the next question. This is a great segue. Is there a difference? Are they the same thing? We define grading as X and assessment as X, but is the universal understanding that those are two independent things, or are they the same?
I'm really happy you asked that question, because guilty as charged, and probably guilty as charged in the last few minutes, we often use the words assessment and grading interchangeably. Mm-hmm. We use the verb assess and the verb grade interchangeably. And I would like to disentangle those two concepts, because historically, there is tension there. Back to what I mentioned before about the advent of obligatory schooling in the 20th century in the United States, we introduced a grading system in order to track kids, in order to sort them into different hierarchies of talent and ability, right? And so if you think about it, the student, the learner was not the primary audience of that data, right? The letter grade, that data, the audience was the institution itself. Mm-hmm. So it could know how to sort its students. Mm-hmm. Whereas assessment, especially as the way we're describing it, the way that Ann Marsh described it, assessment, the primary audience is always the learner, right? And that's why we need to be more explicit and clear about the criteria. That's why we need to be more granular in the reporting of you're doing well here, but not so much here. The learner is the audience. And I think it's safe to say at this current moment, the GPA, the traditional transcript, the traditional letter grades, the intended audience are college admissions offices.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And so there is an inherent tension there, right? Where we're competing for two different sets of preferences from two different audiences, mm-hmm. right? The college board needs this, or the college admissions offices need this, excuse me, but the learner needs something different, right? And we know that the richer data can be found in this kind of proficiency-based reporting and recording of data that we're doing, where an alphanumeric grade is not needed at all. In fact, I always love to tell this story. In the old way of doing things where the learner is the audience, one student gets their history paper back and they've got an 85. Mm-hmm. Second student gets their paper back and they've got an 85. The first student was really good at organizing their ideas, but didn't really cite much evidence to back up their claims. And that's why they got an 85. The second student had a lot of evidence to back up their claims. They did that research, but man, was the paper a mess in terms of organization. And yet the audience, the learner, would not necessarily have the right data with that number to know that my unique profile is an 85 for this reason versus my unique profile is an 85 for this reason.
It's interesting. Yeah. I've never really heard anybody explain it that way. It makes a lot of sense.
So again, alphanumeric grades, letter grades, it doesn't serve our learners well. The audience was always someone else. But I think we can all agree in the 21st century where we have, I think for the most part, all shifted to a philosophy that we believe all students can learn. Mm-hmm. We need to restructure school to reflect back that philosophical commitment. Because right now, as one author put it, the grammar of school, the way we structure school, is still reflective of those older philosophical assumptions.
Ann Marsh, that kind of leads into our next question, really about making and ensuring our assessment practices and reporting systems are equitable. How do we do that?
Yeah, you know, we have really, really put a lot of energy in thinking about that and adjusting our practices, even from the standards-based approach that we were doing 5 or 10 years ago. And I'd say really starting at the place that we believe that all learners can learn, but then thinking about them as individuals. Not every kid needs the assessment to look exactly the same, right? Some of our kids visually need more white space. Some of them are going to need more time. Some of them are going to want to chunk out their assessment more. Some of them aren't going to take the exact same pathway or the same pacing to get to the same reporting or assessment time. And those are all measures of ensuring equity, but also little things that we do, like making sure that when we start a unit, all of the kids have the proficiency scale for the summative assessment ahead of time. It's transparent. They know exactly what they're going to be assessed on and they can prepare for it. It's just like for us having a job description that has bullet points of what we need to do at work. This is like the bullet points for that unit that tell them, here's exactly how I can be successful. This is the pathway. And then there's other things like from our grades, we're really reporting on mastery for each of our power standards. And so what you don't see in the grades are things like participation or homework or how many times I, you know, said something during class. So a lot of times when we partner with schools in a consulting capacity, they ask us things like, tell me about your grading percentages. Well, it's mastery. It's based on mastery of the skills. And really what that does is it takes out any pieces of the grade, the old grade, that aren't necessarily equitable because they're thinking about home environment, or they're thinking about prior knowledge, or they're thinking about personality types and how comfortable they are sharing. So things like work habits are not included in our grades. It's really just, have you met the standard that would tell us that you've mastered this skill, or have you not? And then it's also a lot about how we show up to support each kid, right? If you really believe that every kid is capable of learning, then we're going to deploy the resources that we have in terms of faculty and support to make sure that we're interacting with every kid early and often. And if we see that there is a gap in knowledge, we're not waiting until the end of the unit before we intervene or give feedback. We're doing it early enough so that they can be successful all the way along. So those are some of the pieces.
And I just to add on to what Ann Marsh has shared with us, I think as she's emphasized mastery, I think that the counterpoint of that is to start to question what we assume about time in education. And this is what I really mean. Rose Colby, a great expert of competency-based education, says, you know, in the old way of doing school, my phrase before, the grammar of schooling is one where mastery is the variable and time is the constant, right? Okay, kids, you all have got this amount of time, and then we're all going to take the test on this day. And, you know, the chips will fall as they may. Some of you will be able to make an A at that point. Some of you will have a B, right? And so the level of mastery and achievement is varied. In a competency-based environment where equity is at the center, we have to flip that script, right, such that time becomes a variable and mastery becomes the constant, right? And I think there are some ways we can do that once we really unpack the function of assessment, right? And so I'm going to give us four functions of assessment, right? Or four ways it can function. The first one is pre-assessment. When the kids walk in, a pre-assessment gives you immediate information of where you can meet them at, in terms of where they're at. Right. And now you know how to strategically group students. You know which group needs extension. You know which group needs intervention. You know who's right where they need to be. And that way you can equitably serve the needs of all those unique profiles.
Not to interrupt you, but that's assessing their particular level of understanding of a competency from the very beginning.
Right. Before they've gotten any instruction from you. That is okay. Your pre-assessment. And that is going to inform your instructional design such that it is more.
What a lot of us would call a diagnostic, basically. Right. Pre-assessment is diagnosing. Where are they before we even start?
And so now we're on the learning progression, right? And now I want to talk about another function, which is formative assessment. And we often call this assessment for learning. And so we're starting to deliver instruction. The kids are starting to engage in learning experiences. And what do? We check for understanding. Where are they at? But this is assessment for learning. To use a sports analogy, this is at practice. And at practice, the scoreboard is not turned on. And this is a challenging one for a lot of us, right? Which is It's an element of ungrading. This is where assessment and grading are different. Those formative moments, we don't need the scoreboard on. We don't need that to roll up into some sort of academic score that goes into their GPA and things like that. This is practice. And then you have something called summative assessment. And now here's where pacing comes in terms of varying. Some kids need more time in the formative journey before they're ready for the summative assessment when the scoreboard is turned on, because now we're doing assessment, not for learning, but of learning, assessment of learning, right? And so pacing and the very ability of pacing can be a way to equity. And what I mean by this is that some kids are ready to do a summative assessment before others, let them. Some kids are not, and I will use the analogy of none of us are all ready to walk at the exact same moment as toddlers, and that is true of learning other things in life as well, right? And so to be equitable, we need to honor that aspect of human nature. And so the last function of assessment that also is a pathway to equity is assessment as learning, and I'm talking about self-assessment, and I'm talking about students having a seat at the table to assess themselves and to engage in dialogue with their teacher about, like, here's where I think I'm at. Why do you think I'm not right there? And then we can have an equitable conversation where everyone gets heard and everyone has voice, right? So I think once we see that assessment has variable functions. And now we see that once we employ those different functions, it's a way to flip the script on time and mastery. This is a pathway to equity.
And Jared, I would just add on, just thinking about your sports analogy, that just like if you're on any type of sports team, you spend exponentially more time practicing than you do in games or meets. Same thing with formative versus summative. The bulk of the assessment that we should be doing is that formative assessment. Its purpose is for coaching. And then there are only really much fewer times that are summative, just like our practice and game schedule isn't the same amount of time in practice as it is in games. We really want to prepare these kids so when they get to that higher stakes moment, they're ready for it.
And Kaylin, I would be remiss if I didn't also say one more thing about being equitable assessors and graders. And it is this.
Tell me.
Remember what I said. This is criteria-based grading. Mm. And what I'm getting at there is stop penalizing grades because a kid didn't get there on time. Mm. Or because a student turned something in a day late. Or because they're
it's
not prepared.
Messy. They didn't put their last name on it, or they misspelled a word on a math test.
We absolutely aggregate behavior from what we're actually trying to measure, right? Which is learning that is measured up against certain discrete, explicit standards. And real quick, a story. When I transformed in regards to this, I was an English teacher and I had a student who was constantly turning things in late and I was penalizing him for it. And I was getting frustrated about it. And I went to this counselor at the school and the counselor pulled me aside and was like, "Do you realize that student, their parents have not been at home for the last 2 weeks and he's taking care of his little brother and his little sister." Mm-hmm. I nearly fell over. I was penalizing a kid who did not have the bandwidth, the capacity, the support to bring his whole self to school the same way some other kids could.
For sure.
And yet I was penalizing him through grades. And that was tragic when I realized that. And it completely transformed my understanding of what should count towards the grade and when we should deal with behavior and how we should deal with it. And it is not through grades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that this episode of the podcast could probably be about 6 hours easily. However, we have one more question for the sake of time. We probably have some listeners who want to change the way that they're grading after hearing the two of you. What's one thing that you would each tell them to do right now to make a difference?
Simplify, simplify, simplify. We use a 4-point proficiency scale. We don't have 100 points. We don't have 6 different letter categorizations. We have got 4 simple proficiency levels. Simplify, simplify, simplify. What does a 92.5% versus a 95.5% mean? It doesn't mean anything. Mm-mm. And it doesn't serve our students well at all. And so I would simplify my scoring with symbols, whether those be PR for proficient or A for A, whatever your symbols be. And I would up my game on feedback. How might I deliver valuable, actionable, clear feedback? I would spend more time on feedback and less time sitting there crunching numbers.
Jared, I totally agree with you. But I would say if there was only one thing that you're going to change about your assessment practice, I would say add in that pre-assessment. So many times when I talk to teachers, they're not using a pre-assessment. And that means that you have kids who you've underestimated their ability and they're already proficient in the skills and are just sitting through them. Or you have kids who don't yet have the skills that you're assuming that they do have. And so either way, There is no middle learner. And so often, if we're not using a pre-assessment, we're teaching to an imaginary middle. And so I would say adding in that pre-assessment and using that data for real to guide your instruction in small groups is pretty transformative. So that'd be my first step.
Both great pieces of advice. Well, it is always a pleasure, Jared and Ann Marsh. Thank you both so much for joining on this episode. And thanks to our listeners for joining Start With Questions, a transformational leadership podcast hosted by Mount Vernon Ventures. See you on the next one.
Thank you, Kaylin.
Thanks. See ya. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Jared.